So, of course, leaving Thailand, your MotoGP World Championship leader is on a KTM. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
It is with very little pleasure to inform the airways that our bikes has been put on hiatus, at least for now.
1 week, maybe four. We'll have to wait and see. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 640 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Trey Harrison. Glad you could join us. And we're back. This is our first race review of 2026 that isn't, you know, the Rolex. It's the proper one, you know.
Regularly scheduled programming.
Yes, exactly. About time. And it's good to be back. And we are kicking off 2026. With the MotoGP season opener this weekend, the Thai Grand Prix from Buriram, the Chang International Circuit, one of our favorites on the calendar. I do love me a bit of Chang, you know, in this case. And, well, it didn't disappoint. A lot of drama and some very big newsworthy stuff to come out of MotoGP. The main one being, well, Aprilia might be here, and they might have arrived sooner than expected, because that was an ass-whooping from one Marco Bezzecchi. He doesn't win these narrow. He wins them big. We've said this before on this show, and this was another example of that, a crushing victory. We'll talk more about that in a little bit, of course, but joining me as per, we have Cameron Buckley. Hello, Cam.
Hello, everyone. You know, it was going so well for one Yoan Mir up until the point where it very quickly wasn't. And this one wasn't even on him for once.
No, there wasn't a crashing. There wasn't a tucking of the front. There wasn't an accident where he hit his teammate out. No, his rear tire went kaboom. Well, kind of. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
It becomes very important later.
Absolutely. Also joining me is RJ O'Connell. Hello again, buddy. How's it going?
You gentlemen thought that everything was hopeless at Yamaha when you forgot the most important victory that they've taken, that they will take all season.
What's that?
They won the Tuk Tuk Challenge. Pramac won the Tuk Tuk Challenge on Sunday.
Well,
I think that's even better than winning the Grand Prix.
Well, the good news is that that is the only win that Yamaha will see on anything resembling pace for the remainder of this year, because they haven't even heard of pace. It is a foreign word there.
Yeah, no kidding. If you haven't seen it, by the way, I do recommend going out of your way to MotoGP's YouTube channel and finding Neva. It's about a 40-minute live stream. This is annoyingly, I would have watched this live, but it was 4 a.m. UK time when this happened. But it was a glorious tuk-tuk race with all the teams. They used the sprint grid for qualifying. There's an actual race start we had. Jack Miller and Toprak Razgatioglu doing wheelies on the warm-up lap, which delighted the crowd. And like, I love that after the race, the Toprak said, yeah, it's great because Jack's also psycho.
Well, you know, better he learn that now than later.
Absolutely. I got the feeling that like Toprak and Jack are going to make for some fantastic social content, if nothing else, over the course of this season. Two
very silly men.
They should be fronting a buddy cop movie of some kind already. It's glorious. There was corner cutting. There was funny spells. It was, if you ever watched the F1 Lego race in Miami, it was very much like that. Maybe this was a Liberty influenced idea, but it works. Keep doing them. They're fun. I like fun in my motorsport. So yeah, that was cool as shit. It's on, like I said, it's on MotoGP's YouTube channel. Go find it. It's well worth the price of admission. Absolutely, very much so. Enjoy that. Right. Because we've got our boys in the house here, a quick explanation, you know, because this is going to be a little bit of a confusing schedule over the next week or so. Now, tell a lie between us, recording these podcasts, we normally record them on Wednesdays. This is full disclosure. It's the best time we can to get all three of us together. Sometimes we get loaded a little bit. Like, this was always going to be the difficult week. We had MotoGP and IndyCar both kick off their seasons this weekend, as well as Formula One starting a week from now. So we have to do a season preview for that, which you will hear later next week. This week, I should say, by the time this goes out on Monday. So, here's how we're going to do this. This MotoGP episode you're listening to is going to go up on Monday. You're going to get the F1 season preview on Thursday, and then we're going to do a double header of IndyCar action next week. We're going to double up St. Petersburg and Phoenix into one episode so we can get that out of the way and we can get back on schedule. It's just so that we don't end up doing like three podcasts in one sitting. It can get a little bit crazy, and I don't think you want to listen to us talk for 4 hours straight. No one wants that.
Well, let's be real. Like, we can rain check IndyCar for a little bit because it was the opening round today. What do you think happened?
Alex Palou beat the field's arse like a Cherokee drum.
That's probably harsh on Cherokee drums. It was a joke.
Yeah, if this is a minor spoiler, he won by 13 seconds. It was an absolutely crushing victory.
On the incorrect strategy.
That is the largest margin of victory in the history of the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. I know that's not a long history, but that's still noteworthy. Scott McLaughlin was second. Christian Lundgaard was third. More next week.
Yeah. What did you think was going to happen? Haha, you thought it was going to be different this time. I'll give you one small hint. I genuinely thought Alex Palou might enter this season a little bit tired off the back of the strung-out McLaren lawsuit that was only just settled a couple of days before this race weekend started. Wrong! Wrong again!
Yeah, you know, very quickly, Scott McLaughlin pole Alex Palou win is slowly turning into the IndyCar version of Leclerc pole Verstappen win.
Isn't it like the fact that Max Verstappen has 11 wins off Charles Leclerc pole positions?
Yes.
That is so sicko. Because it's back-to-back years that McLaughlin's qualified on pole and then Palou's gone on to win the race in St. Pete. That is just, that's sick. That's just sick. And McLaughlin drove a near perfect race. He really didn't do much wrong. And he gets beaten like a pulp into second. It's not fair. Anyway, more on that next week. And we'll get through that and our F1 season preview in the next couple of days. So do listen out for that. Also, some general housekeeping while we're here, of course. You can follow us on facebook.com/motorsport101 or on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you can watch some video highlights of the show, you can. youtube.com/motorsport101. Motorsport101. You can follow us on Instagram at Motorsport101 Pod. Our TikTok account is M101_podcast. I am off my game today. That's really funny of me. Our website, motorsport101.com, if you want to hear Dre's race review. It's back. Hey.
Yeah.
26. Yeah, all of that. So what are my full written thoughts on everything that happened this weekend in MotoGP and in IndyCar and St. Petersburg, which will be out by the time this episode goes out. You can follow us over there as well. And if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our episodes. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. As Jason is doing so right now. Thanks, Jason. He's loyal. All our other Discord listeners are watching the NASCAR race at COTA as we speak. Traitorous heathens, all of them.
They're watching
somehow will be the most foregone conclusion this weekend.
Is it going to be SVG or is it going to be Zilich? It'll probably be SVG by the time we actually finish this recording. Who knows? We'll have to wait. See, we're literally recording this live as that race is happening right now. So
WrestleMania 2018, 28 intro.
Once in a lifetime, etc. Or twice, depending on who you ask. Right.
Five times in a season.
With that in mind, let's get to it. Let's review MotoGP Thai Grand Prix.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to 2026. And this MotoGP season started in a lot of ways the same way that 2025 ended, with Marco Bezzecchi for Aprilia on top. He took a narrow pole position over Marc Marquez, took the whole shot in the Grand Prix, ripped out a 1.5-second lead on the opening lap, and he didn't really look back. He would go on to win by nearly 6 seconds in what may be Aprilia's greatest day in MotoGP. Bez became the first Aprilia rider to win 3 in a row. All 4 Aprilia riders finished in the top 5 for the first time ever. And because of a sprint win and a second for Pedro Acosta, he's the first KTM rider to ever lead the world championship. you're a fan of Mark Marquez, as we all are, a broken rim caused his rear tire to go out, ending his day while he was fighting for podium places. Yoann Mir also suffered a late failure while running in fifth. Gentlemen, where do we start? I guess we knew Aprilia was going to be good. How'd they end up so good here?
Who wants to start the ripping? Long story short, they looked like they were going to be close right from testing. We tested here 2 days prior. Bez was quickest in the test. Their pace looked pretty damn good. We thought that Mark might look a little bit quicker, but we didn't know fully for that because he didn't really do a full race sim because he had the shits and he crashed in the middle of his race sim. So that was always going to be a little bit of a question mark about that. As for the weekend itself, I'm going to get a little bit technical here for a second. I don't normally do this on the show, but allow me to try briefly. This is one of only 3 Grand Prix on the calendar that Michelin bring their tougher spec of tire. It's to do with heat degradation. They don't obviously want tires to delaminate too quickly because Thailand gets very, very hot. Over 30 degrees ambient temperature. It's normally around 50 plus on the track itself. They only use this tire here, Mandalika, and I believe the Red Bull Ring is the other track because of just the risk of thermal deg, basically. Aprilia tends to go really well on that harder, stiffer carcass of tire because I think they make a lot more of their lap time on aerodynamics. They've always gone well on low grip tracks, low grip situations, low grip scenarios because their aero is where they get a lot of their speed, especially through corners. There's actually a really great clip. If you, I don't normally give them praise, but I will on this occasion. TNT Sports did a really great video segment on their Instagram page with Neil Hodgson and Chaz Davies. They actually had a frame by frame of Bezzecchi's fastest lap in practice, which was about half a second faster than Mark Marquez's. And you could see where Bez was making his lap time. If you haven't seen it, go out of your way to find it. I don't think TNT's Instagram is region locked at all. It's a really, really great segment, and I don't normally give them praise, but I feel like they earned their flowers on this one. And Chaz Davies is a fantastic riding coach, and we all know he was a great World Superbike rider as well in his own right. But Cam, I also want to bring this one to you real quick because I'm going to lob this up to you as well because we felt like, and again, full credit to the race. I've got to give them their due. I know I'm saying this as a Crash.net employee now, but full credit to the race for being the first to figure this out. They've got a fucking F-duct on that bike.
Yes. A motorcycle with an F-duct. Haven't heard those words. Well, I haven't heard those words in that order ever. Haven't heard of an F-duct in a long time.
15 years.
We're just inventing new sentences.
We are inventing new sentences. Now, the biggest thing...
That was, what, 2010? McLaren had an F-duct on their F1 car?
Yes, that was the year of the F-ducts, and then they were swiftly banned because some teams had to basically have their drivers drive with one hand on the wheel. Somewhat safer in this scenario, even though it's on a motorcycle. It's a pair of ducts up under their front winglets that are just absurd on the Aprilia that ducts the air through the side of their fairing to actually, if you basically use your forearms to block the holes they've put in the top of the gas tank in the fairing.
As you tuck in, yeah.
As you tuck in, it will actually duct the air through the sides and stall all of their aerodynamics to actually bleed some of the drag off the bike. Really ingenious solution on the bike. And you pretty much got it in one as well. Like they make a lot of their time quite opposite to the Ducati, where the rear of the bike of the Aprilia is still very good. But it's mainly front tire and that initial tipping into the motorcycle into the turn and aerodynamics where they can carry that apex speed. And really in the fast sweeping turns here, of which there are a couple of Thailand, they can make a lot of lap time. But the biggest thing is that hard casing rear tire blunts what the Ducati is so good at. That just vertical traction, put the power down and launch out of a turn that makes the Ducati such a universal tool of destruction across the calendar. They can't really do that. And we saw that last year in Mandalika where Bez was just blowing the field away up until the point where he speared Mark Marquez.
And then we got the other dominant guy of that weekend, Fermín Aldeguer, his first win in MotoGP, because he was so much better than everybody else on the 24 Ducati, which was a weird place to be, but here we were. But if it wasn't for that first lap takeout of Marquez, Bez probably wins that race by 5 or 6 seconds. I'd argue. Yeah, because he was so fast that weekend.
He couldn't start worth a damn. Another thing with the Aprilia, looks like their whole shot device is a hell of a lot better this year, because every time they were on pole down the stretch last year, the Ducatis would swamp them into turn one.
It happened a little bit in the sprint still, where Marquez took the lead off the opening corner, but in the Grand Prix, they got it spot on. Bez was able to hold the lead, and, well, Bez led the entire race from start to finish. He was never, ever challenged for that victory. It was a completely dominant win for Marco Bezzecchi. Like I said, he doesn't win the narrow ones. Valencia was an exception at the end of last year. He wins big. And this was another big win for Bez. I'll win mine by a half a dozen seconds. Just
once he actually put together a straightforward one, given, he tucked the front the previous day in the sprint.
Crashed three times that day. Crashed in pre-practice too. Crashed in qualifying, and he was already on pole. He was pushing really hard to try and break the lap record, which he was on pace to do. He already broke the lap record in practice on Friday. Tried to break it again in qualifying. Tucked the front on the final corner. Didn't matter because he'd already had pole by that point, and Mark had already
just a smidge.
0.035. It was very close. Mark was the only man in the same postcode.
Marquez twist that bike into getting second on the grid, because we were watching it, right? And we're thinking, right, okay, he's fast in the first and second sectors, but there's no way he's going to carry this on through the rest of the lap. And he carried it on just enough to get second on the grid.
He's Mark Marquez, and this is just the insane bullshit he pulls out of his butt half the time. I like how he put it in the post qualifying interview of he saw the gap and is like, enough. It's like, fine, I'll dip into the well a little bit, and punched in a time completely out of reach of any other Ducati. But I mean, we kind of have to save Mark a little bit for later because of what ended up happening really across his weekend. Pedro Acosta.
The man's given it the old college try, I have to say. We saw where this was going in the back half of last season, where Acosta was on a good day in the podium and was challenging for wins. And he's entered this season pretty much doing that. He was opportunistic in the sprint. Obviously, Bez tucking the front early in the sprint opened the door for a potential Acosta sprint win. And he got that sprint win. But I think we'll cue into our second main segment, because how he got there was controversial now. To fill in the blanks, Bez crashes early. Marquez tries to slow the pace down a bit, trying to handle Acosta, and he's trying to use that dirty air difference to keep Acosta behind him. Acosta's like, fuck that. I'm really strong going into sector four in the final corner. I'm going to try and outbreak Marquez there. He tries four times. He's successful 0 of 4 times. But on the penultimate lap, Mark makes a small error going into turn five. Opens the door for Pedro to get him back into turn eight. Mark counterattacks by dive bombing from a long way back at the final corner. He's ahead at the apex, but they initiate contact. It's light contact. Both men stay on their bikes. Acosta was pushed off the track a little bit. Mark's able to make the corner, is able to put his foot down. He's got a half second advantage off the back of that. It looks like Mark's going to win the sprint, and then Simon Crafar from Race Direction drops the clanger. Mark Marquez drop one position. So he gets that message through turn eight on the final lap. On the final corner of the final lap, he slows down. He lets Acosta through, and Acosta becomes the youngest sprint winner in MotoGP history. Still only 21 years old. We forget that about Pedro sometimes. It was quite an awkward post-race scene for a couple of reasons. One, Pedro didn't even really agree with the penalty. If you listen to him, in other words, he was like, I was fine with it. It was like, this is what the fans want to see. I love this kid. he basically said, it actually felt a little bit tainted because I didn't really beat him fair and square, in the sense of he felt like it was gifted the win because of the penalty call, and he was generally fine with the minor contact. Mark sarcastically claps at race direction as he pops up for the podium celebration. And, well, when he was interviewed, he was quite diplomatic. He said, look, we have to adapt to the rules. Quote, this is the new era of MotoGP, which I think is a thinly veiled shot towards race direction's office, I think, is the right way to go. You've seen it, Cam. I've seen it. I don't know about you.
I'm about to see it because they're about to hit the final quarter with going out of the final lap. And
here we go.
He looks like he even touches him. I understand because, like, I missed this real time when it happened. Like, I woke up to Acosta one, and now everybody wants to treat Simon Crafar like they treated Freddie Spencer for years. And I knew this day was going to come.
The most predictable, almost as predictable as an Alex Palou middle stint these days. Like,
I'm going to be honest, in the heat of the moment, I admit I didn't like the call.
I still don't know how I feel about the call.
I must admit, I've kind of drifted back towards the middle the more I've seen it and the more I think about it. I'll give Simon Crafar this. He generally has done a pretty good job as chief steward so far. I don't think he's had any really egregious handlers in that sense. And to be fair, the more I think about it, the more I think this is more of a 50-50 call in the sense of Mark comes from a long way back. There's no getting around it. And if Crafar's had one point of emphasis since becoming chief steward, he doesn't want contact on his overtakes. That's pretty clear. And by that extent, if that's the line he wants to draw, that you've got to pass him clean, then fair enough. It's a minor penalty in the grand scheme of things. It's not like it gave him a long lap penalty or converted it into time or something like that. It was a position drop. It was a return the position call. Something I wish F1 would still have. It's a shame we don't have that anymore, quite frankly. So for me, I'm kind of okay with it. In my heart of hearts, I still don't think that's a penalty.
I think that is, like, just barely within the confines of hard but fair. Reason being, contact was very, very minor. Mm-hmm. I mean, on the first three times I watched, I'm like, did they actually touch? Or did Pedro go wide trying to hang it? They did touch just a smidge.
Yeah, both men admitted that there was minor contact, yeah.
I think the biggest thing for me is that you kind of have both of them initiating. Mark by diving in, and he did get the bike stopped. He made the turn, but Pedro does. Basically, he knows he's on his inside. He tries to hang it around the outside, and he's going to get squeezed out in that scenario.
He's not going to back out of it with a lap to go, though, is he?
No, nor would he. If you're backing out of that, you might as well, take a seat at the sideline. It's... I feel like I could have been fine seeing that as a racing incident and going. I'm also not that aggrieved that they had a penalty given for it because didn't seem like both of them disagreed with it, but neither of them seemed to be too heartbroken about it.
Yeah, because Pedro's a fans guy, and Pedro, like I've said before, he's a very intelligent for a man who's 21. He's the most plugged-in MotoGP rider I've ever seen when it comes to the general intelligence of how the sport is perceived and from a marketing standpoint. Look, this got people talking about the sport a lot more than it normally does. This was one of those rare, proper transcendent moments where people are talking about a MotoGP incident on social media. Arguably, this was the best sprint they've ever had. It's certainly in that conversation. It was an excellent sprint. And it got people talking, and I think that's why Pedro was like, fair enough, it's whatever.
I guess for me, it does. So if both riders are contributing to the contact, you probably let it go as a racing incident.
My heart of hearts says to me that's a racing incident. I do think that, and not to get too football here, I think Acosta played for it a little bit, in the sense of, it's like he's felt the contact and he's gone down, in inverted commas, where it's like, I could get a call here if I maybe, you know, leave an elbow in, or maybe don't back out of this and see what happens, basically.
Maybe. I also do wonder, is that a penalty if it's Mark Marquez on the inside? Was that a reputation call?
I think there might be a case of that. I think there's a lot of people that don't like Mark and don't like how he rides. And I know certain prominent fans that have gone, that's retribution, because it's like we've got reparations due on Marquez for how he rides and has done in years past.
All is well since 2015.
Right, you know, we know how this sport gets down when it comes to fan-based drama. It never backs down from a fight in that regard, just like Pedro did. The problem I have with it is that, and again, I need to point out, this is not Crayfar's fault. I say this wholeheartedly because he's inherited a job that came from Freddie Spencer, and Spencer had his own way of looking at these situations, often badly.
Mainly blindfolded.
Yes, and as much as MotoGP might not want to admit it, it had about a 15-year run where those sorts of block passes went unscathed.
Those were celebrated. Like when Valentino did it to Sete Gibernau, and everyone cheered him on doing it.
When Marc Marquez did it to Jorge Lorenzo the same year his corner was renamed Lorenzo Corner in 2013, Marquez punted him off the apex in his third ever Grand Prix. Like, it, you know, we had the infamous Lorenzo finger wag. Oh, I didn't like how you rode there, buddy, basically. And the big one, like, again, and I don't mind calling him out by name. Simon Patterson was the guy that said it, like, oh, this has been consistently punished. And I'm like, what's the consistent call on this? Because I can't remember an incident last year that was that borderline. Because the only one I could think of was Morbidelli and Maverick at Mugello, and that was blatant. That was not
a borderline incident. That was not that a 50-50 call.
Yeah, there was not an argument you could make that Morbidelli was an innocent party in that one, no. In my opinion. Because the big one that jumps off the page and re-thumps to me is Bastianini versus Martin at Misano a couple of years ago, and that was not called as a penalty. Spencer let that one go when he was chief steward. So the only question I ask in all of this is, well, where's the line? And David Emmett made this point when he wrote his article about the race weekend on the Saturday. If you let every 50-50 go, you're not really making it a 50-50 call, because it basically says you're letting them get away with it all the time. So clearly your tolerance is higher than that, what you would call a marginal decision. That's an absolutely valid point. And, eventually one of those calls, you're going to have to go the other way with to balance the books, mentally at least. I get that conversation as well.
Because so, when you have like a bunch of these incidents that go unpunished, you then end up with a generation of fans that are looking at this, seeing the penalty, and think they're posting the Sean Deitch meme. You know the one.
Oh yeah, him in front of the wall. Yeah, exactly. And that's the point. Like, if you let, and that's David's point. That was a very valid point. Like I said, if you let all of these go, then it's not really a 50-50, is it? And
right.
Maybe
in the vacuum, I understand it. I understand I understand why in a vacuum this incident looks so. This looks like a ticky-tack call.
Yeah,
it's one of those.
We're probably going to talk more about it than anyone inside MotoGP is ever going to lose sleep over it.
Yeah, like I think Marquez was not so secretly fuming about that call, because he's a racer like anybody else is, and
he's the most racer.
Yes, and he, like I said, he was very diplomatic once a microphone was in his face. He doesn't sarcastically clap at race direction
was
on the sidelines for no reason. Yeah.
Was he diplomatic? This is the new MotoGP. I don't think that veil is very thick.
It never has been with Mark, but he's a lot.
It's more diplomatic than calling them motherfuckers.
Yes. Yes. All the subtlety of a sledgehammer.
that bar is low. But let's just say Marquez has been very, very good over the years at putting the message out without putting the message out, if you get my point. Right. He's never been like Valentino, for example, who had no problem just saying the quiet part out loud when he had his opinions on certain riders. Mark's always been, inverted commas, diplomatic about these things. But if you read between the lines, you know exactly what he's trying to say. And what he's trying to say here is he doesn't like that Crafar is harsher than what Spencer and Mike Webb, when he was making those calls, used to be.
Aggressive guys won't be.
Yeah. And again, this is a sport that has championed and celebrated the final lap dive bomb. Call it what it is. When this is a sport that has championed, celebrated, and embraced that so much over the last 20, 25 years of this era, then I can understand why people might lash out a little bit when they realize, wait, that one didn't get called, or did get called, etc. You know, it's very football, and we don't need VAR to break that down. If anything, I praise Crafar for coming up with a decision before the race was over, because the last thing I think anybody would have wanted to see was that given as a penalty after the flag was over, and then finding out on social media that they dropped Marquez one spot. That would have been shitty.
Saying is, if it gets labeled as consistent, you better keep that energy for the whole year, because if you waver from that at all, people are going to jump down your throat.
Well, yeah, at least Mark Marquez this weekend got better. It was going good for a while in the race, and then it didn't. And dare I say, I mean, we kind of buried it a bit. Ducati didn't look themselves this weekend. Probably it was no. So good. Ducati just didn't look themselves.
Yeah. Again, the hard case rear tire, it really blunts the Ducati force of being able to get their power to the ground. Not to the point where they're just uncompetitive, but they just aren't themselves. And when you've got the pendulum towards Aprilia in terms of the nature of the track, and away from Ducati on the tire, you're going to get weekends like this. The good news is for Ducati is that this is the outlier. At least on speed, Mark was having a very good race. Possibly could have got second, definitely. Could have got third, given Raul Fernandez's tires were basically off the rims by the end of that race. Unfortunately, Mark Marquez's tire quite literally came off the rim, because he had a slide, had to gather it up, went over the curb, and his rear rim exploded.
Yeah, it's the double curbs coming through turn 4 and 5, and that double left-hander sequence. There's double curbs on the inside of that corner. Under normal circumstances, you can probably hit that and be fine. But this is also kind of a freak set of circumstances, because it gets really hot, as I mentioned before, in Thailand. So hot on track temperature that it actually does, to a degree, soften the rims of the bike. So even a small hit can actually snap and break part of the rim. Now, that's exactly what happened to Marquez. It broke off a chunk of his rim, and that caused an immediate tire failure. His rear traveled at 120 miles an hour.
I do not know how he saved that. That might be right at the top of the pantheon of insane Mark Marquez bullshit saves, because it looked like he was going to get sent into the sky.
Yeah, that could have, another day, that's an easy 10-foot high slide. I mean, he's leaving the track in the hospital, an ambulance, so to speak. It's miraculous that not only did he not have a few just like, he actually saved it. He was able to get it stopped safely on the side of the road. There's the onboard video of it on social media. It blows out at 120 clicks. It is crazy that he's able to keep it.
With lean, he's leaned over on that bike. I mean, if you're Ducati, you're not happy. Your podium streak just ended. This is objectively your worst Grand Prix in the last 5 years.
Yeah, this snapped an 88 race Ducati podium streak. The last time Ducati didn't have at least one bike on the podium was the 2021 British Grand Prix at Silverstone. That madness with Fabio Quartararo and Aleix Espargaró on the podium back when Aprilia wasn't the juggernaut it is now.
And Yamaha wasn't completely fucking unwatchable. More on them in a bit. Yeah. At the same time, the pace, at least in the race trim, was not too bad.
Yeah.
So you probably live with the speed. Also, only just escaped with their front row starting streak intact because Mark punched in that incredible lap in qualifying. It's that time of the year again. Francesco Bagnaia, why are you the way that you are? It's starting early this year.
Again, we went into this season thinking that he might be back. This is becoming the story of the bike rider who cried wolf.
The cycle of it's so over, we're so back. It's a pendulum.
It just keeps swinging, and honestly, it's our fault. We keep taking the bait on this because when Davide Tardozzi speaks, we listen. No, we like Davide. We respect Davide. You know,
there was some all timer Davide Tardozzi facial expressions on the camera this weekend.
Man said going into this Grand Prix that Pecco will be a title contender, and that he's got his mojo back. So of course he qualifies 13th and finishes 9th in the sprint and in the Grand Prix.
And he was good in practice. As soon as it came time to put a lap, he just kept making mistakes. You would have bet all the money in the world he would get out of Q1, and he just couldn't.
Second year in a row, he's not made it into Q2 in Buriram, which is unheard of for a guy who's normally such a brilliant qualifier. One of his aces in the hole, he's an excellent quali man. He always has been.
If there was any late audition to try and save his job at Ducati, no. This weekend is a microcosm of that not happening. Beyond that, it's Alex not like Marquez, it needs it
because apparently he's going to fall upward in the Aprilia seat.
You know, we'll see if that's upwards in the grand scheme of things. Alex Marquez, it was just kind of whatever.
Anonymous. It's not even particularly all on him. The sprint, he was in a very unfortunate free wide at turn three on the opening lap where Raul Fernandez is sticking the bike up and having to go wide into turn three. Alex is on the outside. He has to sit his bike up and the concertina knocks him wide. It knocks Fabio DiGiantonio wide and knocked him down, I think, to 18th place on the sprint. There was no points there. And then crashes during the Grand Prix at turn five. So a 0 point weekend for Alex Marquez, which is unfortunate for the championship runner-up from last year. Digia was quick Friday and Saturday, but didn't quite translate it into, obviously, was taken out on the sprint to a degree, and then
he was quickest Ducati pretty much the whole weekend up until Mark put in that brilliant late lap in Q2.
Yeah, could only nurse it home to 8th in the actual Grand Prix. There was nothing more in it for him. The race pace wasn't there, and then, as mentioned, Pecco was 9th. Morbidelli was nowhere. They
will be pining for that softer casing rear tire.
But they're not going to get it for a while now because we found out today from Pirelli that Brazil in 3 weeks' time will also have that same hard casing.
Well, if there's any good news for them, it's that they have a hell of a lot of motorcycles to get data from and no one's been there. That's really the only good side there. The good thing for Ducati is that this is the grand minority of tracks that will use this tire.
Only four.
Only 22. You'd rather not escape with nothing in the Grand Prix, but ask me in 3 Grand Prix's time, and then I'll start to worry if it looks like this. Yamaha. Let me get something here.
Brandbeck won the tuck challenge. And
all right,
we need it.
I'm good.
Cam is masking up.
I can't shake that smell.
Which, given he's got headphones and big curly hair, he literally can't feel in his face, which is hilarious.
I'll hold it in place while we discuss Yamaha. Yamaha stink.
Oof, it's It's one of those moments where it's like a medical movie where the chief doctor goes, "Doctor, it's worse than before." And
yeah, you think you're going to recover, and then the Avengers walk in the room.
Yeah, just ugly. The best Yamaha in the Grand Prix was Fabio Quartararo. No surprises there. He was in 14th place.
Yeah. I mean, we'll rip the bandage off here in Grand Prix, Chim. They were about just under 1.2 seconds a lap off the pace.
Yeah, shout out to Lewis Duncan, who helped me run the numbers on that over at Crash to double check. I was doing my own numbers, and I got to him to double check them for me. A couple of outliers here and there, because Bez was particularly slow the last couple of laps, but we reckon it's about 1.1 seconds. And when it, given
this is a short lap.
Yeah, this is a 90-second lap in race trim. So, you know, that's about 1.3, 1.4% off the pace, which is not great at all. Fabio was, I think, what was it 31 seconds off the win at the line in a 26-lap race? There's no getting around. That's bad.
Yeah, and that was best case, because, like, Fabio was that far off. Everyone else looked hopeless. If there is anything good out of Yamaha, Toprak does look more or less on the pace with the other guys outside of Fabio, which is all you can really ask.
Yeah, I think that's the best case scenario you could ask for Toprak in this scenario, because that bike is a shitter. Yeah. If you're running with the far more experienced Rins, you know, Miller, these are all good riders. These are all MotoGP racers. One of them is a world champion. These are very, very good bike riders on paper. If you're running at the same pace as them, you're not really doing much wrong. So fair play.
First time I'm asking. Who would have thought? Toprak is an incredibly talented motorcycle rider.
What a shock.
It's just that bike is it. If at least the inline four, because it's early days for the V4, it will get better eventually.
Of course.
It has to. I mean, the only reason that a Yamaha didn't finish last this weekend is because Ducati's reserve rider is 176 years old and has my pace on a motorcycle.
Michele Pirro, back in the microwave. Well, 30 more seconds in the microwave will fix it.
God loves a tryer, as they say.
That is shoe leather steak right there.
Yeah.
I'll say
Fermin Anigale will be back next race by the sounds of what I've been told.
Hope so.
For those
broken
who missed
femurs
it,
is no joke.
Yeah, for those who missed it, he broke his leg in the off season. So yeah, not ideal. Just a miserable. I mean, this Yamaha had to run a V4 because when the new regulations kick in 2027. They have to run a V4 because the inline four was not going to fit that new frame. So they're doing this the right way. They're going to take the pain now, but it's become more than obvious to me that this bike is not ready. And
I think it's beyond that as well, because like a V4 gives you certain things dynamically on the bike, but also gives you more power on paper. But it has all the same problems as the old M1 did anyway. Where it just doesn't have any rear grip. The hard rear tire casing is going to exacerbate that even further. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't do anything well. And I wonder, given how far we are into developing this V4, not a lot in race trim, but a lot off the track, if there's just conceptual issues at Yamaha that, much like Honda, had to just basically start over and throw away a lot of their work, that Yamaha might have to go through the same thing, and everyone will going into the 850s. But if the same people developing that develop this,
it's one of those. It has to be done, and they're doing the right thing and taking the pain now. But I mean, the one that leapt off the page to me was that Yamaha's riders did not do any debriefs after the race was over. Yamaha pulled all of them, and their team boss came out to say a few words instead. And I know for a fact the press boss was pissed about that. It's considered poor etiquette by the journos that they can't speak to the riders after the race is over. I understand why. I get it. We, the press box, are the bad guys 9 times out of 10. However, it would be nice to give you stories. basically. So I, you know, we've two of us have been on this desk on before in various other roles. I know that we are often the messengers to get shot the moment we say something we don't, you guys don't like. But you know, please see it from our perspective a little bit when it comes to this. I'll give you a classic example. Eileen Gu with the Winter Olympics that just went by the last, she went viral for torching a male reporter who asked her, do you look at your two silver medals like it was two golds lost? Like, it sounds bad until you realize the context. And shout out to the BBC's Ed Lee, and who did a brilliant, you might have seen him on Sail GP, by the way, if you're into that sport. Did a brilliant job.
Come on down, Ryan Eric King.
Did a brilliant job of explaining. Well, Eileen had told the press wholeheartedly going into the game she was trying to win three golds. So when you look at it in that context, it was actually a completely fair question to ask. Well, are you happy with your two silvers given you were clearly aiming for three golds? But of course, because social media is so engrossed with 60-second highlight reels, we lost a lot of that context. So please don't shoot the messenger is what I'm trying to tell you here, because this gig is complicated. And unfortunately, the way social media is now judge, jury, and executioner, sometimes it's more complicated than that. I'm looking at the direction of a certain award show last week.
This would not even be the most unhinged discourse about Chinese-American female athletes in the Winter Olympics that had just passed.
And it wouldn't even be the most controversial discussion of an award in the last 7 days. Less said about that. The BAFTAs, the better. So, give us a break is what I would say on that one. But yeah, a very interesting Thai Grand Prix to start the season. MotoGP now actually takes a couple of weeks off. We'll be back in 3 weeks' time for the first, well, return, I should say, of the Brazilian Grand Prix. Over the Ayrton Senna circuit. Interesting layout. Looks like it could be quite a quick circuit, actually. That's going to be interesting. We'll see how that plays out. So yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time for that Grand Prix. As mentioned at the top of the show, Formula One season preview will be out a little bit later this week, right before the action kicks off in Albert Park. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cameron Buckley and RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening and watching. And until next time, sayonara.
Later, y'all.
There's any good news to come out of this? At least we notched one up towards the under on Ducati wins.
Well, I took the over. Fuck.